Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need to get ready for Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back because they know small businesses can make a big difference. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to help you make money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you, so call me 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. This market has some of the absolute dumbest sellers I have ever seen.
They know nothing.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about the whole market. Where we got a battle again between the dovish Federal Reserve and angry hedge funds who see bond yields should be soaring in response to rampant inflation. And it's not happening. That tug of war plays out every day, including today. Dow gained 11 points, S&P rose 0.19%. The NASDAQ, which is historically cheap if rates remain this low, rallied 0.59%. I think Fed Chief Jay Powell is right and the inflationistas are mistaken. But reasonable people can disagree about monetary policy. No, it's not what I'm talking about. That's that blabbers I hear all day. It's like a perpetual sound machine. No, I am talking about the idiotic sellers. Yes, I mean the shorts and the brain-dead, plain vanilla sellers who keep selling the sainted stocks of AMC and GameStop to the mobs. Mobs who are determined to take it higher. They want them higher. Listen, I know these stocks are too expensive based on traditional valuation metrics. They mean nothing. Who wants to go back to AMC's movie theaters now that we've spent over a year perfecting our home entertainment setup, getting used to longer form productions like Mayor of Easttown or the Crown, Queen's Gambit? Who wants to pay $20 for a couple of waters and a box of Raisinets? Plus, the film companies, well, they've changed the game, right? They now want their first runs to appear on their own streaming services. Plus, you think Amazon won't do that with MGM if they buy that? If you want to see the next Bond, you need Prime, which is a heck of a lot cheaper than going to the movies. Alexa, play Goldfinger. So believe me, I get the bear case. I get why so many hedge fund managers think that AMC is like The Walking Dead season 11, even with the crafty Adam Aaron running the joint. If you only cared about the fundamentals, including the debt-laden balance sheet, you would have thought betting against this stock would be like, yes, shooting fish with a machine gun in a barrel. But Aaron took one look at the hopelessness of the situation. He put his best face on to talk about any state that opened a movie theater anywhere, even if he hoped that, well, you know what? The customers will take these. Like, hey, I take this to every movie theater. You're allowed to carry it in. Anyway, what he didn't count on was the most amazing force I've seen in ages. A group of ferocious buyers who hated the short sellers viscerously. Viscerous hatred! And allowed AMC to raise cash by selling stock in the open market endlessly. Normally, most buyers would run away from a supposedly doomed situation, but the tip sheet that is Wall Street Bets, a wonderful sight. full of scatological and prurient horrible things that I hope my kids never see. I created a cadre of buyers who didn't care about the usual standards. You know, like things like sales, revenue, cash flow, debt balance sheets, these outdated, silly little things. No, they lapped up all the stock that AMC sold, 43 million shares at just around 10, and they saved the day for the happy warrior. It was brilliant. They got him a great price, and then the stock was free to ramp higher, and it has ever ramped higher. What a rocket. To the moon, diamond something. At this point, it should be obvious that if you try to short AMC, you're going to end up just like the guys who shorted it in January. You're an idiot. The Wall Street Bets crew will run you over just like the tanks rolled over hapless soldiers in World War II. If anything, shorting this kind of stock is what sends it higher. It can go up 70% from when they raise capital, because when the bulls crush you, it's Pamplona, partner. You got to buy back your shares at a higher price in order to close out your position. Have you ever been? Do you know I used to own Longhorns? Holy cow, they kill you just to get the box of donuts in your hands. So why the heck did so many hedge fund managers try to short this thing again? Why are regular sellers offering stock? Well, they could have just gotten out of the way. Instead, they turned themselves into fodder for the Wall Street Bets cohort, which is why AMC was up 19% just today. They can probably gun it up to the mid-20s on the back of this latest short squeeze, and if the plain vanilla sellers just walk away, wow. You know what? Memo to all the sellers tomorrow. Take a breather. Go to the movies. Do something interesting. I don't know. What's interesting? Watch some Netflix. Go to work even. But stop selling your AMC and see what happens. And we're seeing the same thing with the stock at GameStop. Now, I was actually worried about this video game retailer because it's lost its reason for being in a world where everybody just downloads their games online. These days, you don't need GameStop except for hardware, and anybody can sell you hardware. But GameStop, it's got a savior, the insurgent-turned-insider whom nobody knows called Ryan Cohen, a man of great mystery, who's also decided to sell company stock in order to fix the balance sheet, just like Adam Aaron. The Wall Street Bets crowd helped make it happen. Many agreed to lap up that stock that's being offered. And now that the balance sheet can be fixed by that, not that it was all that bad, and all that stock is now placed with the Wall Street Bets people, this thing can boom again along with the mall. GameStop could potentially turn itself around, although we have no idea what it'll turn itself around into. Is it really worth $17 billion? Abstraction. Who cares? Only an idiot asks that kind of question now. It's irrelevant. Because this isn't investing. This is the ultimate stock fight club. You think I learned this stuff wearing a suit at Goldman Sachs, the two things that make them really hate me? The last time a bunch of hedge funds shorted GameStop, the bulls practically drove them out of business. You'd think it would be a cautionary tale, right? Don't try to short something with such a rabid fan base. Keep your stock. Stay out of the ring. Yet these money managers and individuals keep selling the stock like there's nothing going on here. Like, oh, man, let's offer some stock. Maybe the buyers will take us. Are you out of your minds? Listen to me, sunshine. This thing going higher. What kind of chowderheads offer stock at 225 or 235? It closed up 33 to 242. To a group of buyers who are desperate to drive it, their price target is 250 or 300. Now, on Wall Street, they have these price targets. Oh, I'm taking my price target up for NVIDIA 700. These guys have real price targets and firepower. I've never seen anything like this. A group of buyers with no sensitivity to price. They'd rather pay 280 than 240. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine going to a store and you say, well, how much is that sweater? And they say $30. Can I pay 50? How much is that? You know, I got this one. Look at this. It's a Ferragamo, right? $180. Hey, you know what? Do you mind if I pay $300 for that? Why not? Okay, now, these people don't have unlimited firepower, but they've got enough firepower to engineer a short squeeze anytime a bunch of professionals decide to bet against this thing. Sellers go away, come back, one back. I was trying to do like a ditty, like that sell in May nonsense that didn't work. Sellers go away, come on back another day when game stops at 300. Now, it's not that the bulls know some secret about Ryan Cohen's turnaround plan. They're just committed to buying this thing, and they steamroll the shorts whom they hate and lap up the long stock whom they think are stupid, often much higher than you thought possible. Anyone who tries to fight this move is out of their minds. Just let it go up already. You can re-register at a higher level. I'm tired of you. Now, there's one thing I don't understand. The meme stock believers only seem to like AMC and GameStop. But now they've got a lot of new capital thanks to these rallies, right? They can train their guns on any number of stocks. I got a couple for them. And just because they may take them just because they hate me and then spite me by saying that I said sell them because they love truth because it's periodically interesting to them. All right, here we go. First, they could open up the howitzers on the people selling Beyond Meat, which has a gigantic 22% short position, even though it's doing some incredible deals with McDonald's just now. How about that China KFC deal? Wowza! Plus, the great reopening will allow CEO Ethan Brown to sell into all the different cafeterias that are back in business. In the meantime, Beyond Meat has lowered prices, improved the taste of its plant-based substitute. I think it'd be very easy for the Wall Street bets to gun this one, engineer a short squeeze, wipe out the shorts, make a lot of people pay, and then go home and have how about a Wendy's Baconator? Second, Ford. All right, here's a stock that jumped 8.5% today. Ooh, they liked that immediately. After CEO Jim Farley announced that he wants to be second to none in electric vehicles here in the U.S., he's throwing down the gauntlet against Elon Musk. More important, if Farley can pull up this transformation, the company will be able to plow even more money into EV, so it's a virtuous circle. He intends to outsell Tesla's new Cybertruck with the electric 5 F-150 truck, now 70,000 reservations. Okay, so maybe it should be 82,300 to keep it. I don't know, but it's working. Sellers, get out of the way. Here comes the Bronco, the Mustang Mach-E, and the F-150 Lightning, America's most popular truck. Why sell this stock here? Walk away. Let him take it to 15. All right, finally, how about Roblox? Now, I am relentless in this Roblox because it is going higher. When the online gaming company came public via direct listing, the insiders sold very little stock. They're believers. The only real stock for sale is from investors who bought it earlier and now ring the register thinking it's a good trade. I think that's nuts. Roblox is putting up some stunning numbers. Again, it'd be easy for the Wall Street Bets crew to sop up a couple of days worth of stock, take it to 90, take it to 110 practically overnight, then write all about it and say, I hate Cramer. He said to sell Roblox and we bought it. That way they get everything, their whole zeitgeist, and then they're even happy because they can trash me. And I like that because I'm from Philadelphia. Honestly, the craziest thing about the Wall Street Bets crowd is that they don't know their own strength. Maybe they're worried that they don't have enough ammo to take on more than two stocks. I think they're wrong. I think they're selling themselves short. Here's the bottom line. Anyone shorting AMC or GameStop is out of their mind. Anyone selling, just walk away and watch how high they can take it. Wall Street Bets is too powerful, and trying to bet against them right now is just giving them more ammo. I'm just surprised they don't apply the same playbook to the Cramer Wall Street Bet faves, to the man, Diamond Hands, emoji, 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 Beyond Meat, Ford, Roblox. How's that? That's why I went to Harvard and Harvard Law, to get stupid. Charlie in New York, Charlie.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Booyah.
Thanks for taking my call, man.
No problem.
First and foremost, I want to give a big shout out to my dad, Charlie Jr. He got me started with investing not so long ago with the help of Jimmy Chill. We've done fairly well for ourselves. So
that's
thank
what
you
I want to hear. That's what I want to hear. Jim, I like that. And walk away from GameStop, man. They want that thing at 400. Let's give them their due.
Jim, my question's about an airline stock. This stock has taken off since you suggested it back in January as a reopening play. How much more room on the runway does Southwest Airlines got? And do you still love it as a buy?
I love it even more. I L-U-V it, which happens to be the stock symbol. It's at 61. I think it goes to 75. You know, look, this is Gary Kelly. He knows how to run an airline, even when everyone's running out of business. He'd be the man to back, and I say back him. All right, listen to me, Wall Street Best Credit. I know you love me, and I feel the same, obviously, right? And I'm just surprised you're not targeting Beyond Meat. Oh, come on, 22% short. Come on, you're salivating. Or do you really have to have GMO in your meat? Ford Motor. Hey, you know what? Got the momentum going against Musk. Good narrative there. Roblox. I know you probably don't like games that are safe, but a lot of parents do. Oh, man, buddy, tonight, it's a big day for Salt. Oh, I take that back. I didn't mean it. And I'm covering all the bases here. First off, I'm sitting down with the CEO of Workday to find out what's working in its most recent quarter. Then I'm talking all the things identity with the CEO of Okta and dissecting its high octane report. And a blizzard in May, I'm talking with the CEO of Snowflake to find out more about the quarter. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the last few months, the cloud-based software stocks have all been hammered as part of this kind of rotation out of the stay-at-home stocks into the great reopening stocks. But what if some of these software-as-a-service plays could also be reopening plays? Take Workday, the cloud-based software company that helps businesses automate back-office jobs and financial planning and human resources. This is one of our cloud kings, but last year it lagged because its peers because Workday tends to sign big, complicated deals with its customers. These deals were often deferred as enterprises had to shift their tech budgets toward collaboration software and, of course, cybersecurity. Now that the world's going back to normal, Workday just reported a good quarter after the close today. More importantly, the subscription revenue growth guidance for the next quarter came in higher than expected. They raised their full-year forecast. We got some accelerated revenue growth here. The margins are looking better, too. Plus, management announced an ambitious plan, I think this is most important, to expand its workforce by 20% this year. And not the same kind of people you think that always get these. So let's take a closer look with Aneel Bhusri, the co-founder, chairman, and CEO of Workday, to learn more about the quarter and where you're headed, Mr. Bhusri. Welcome back to Mad Money.
It's great to be with you, Jim.
And, Neil, I always felt that you were at a tremendous disadvantage during the pandemic because your products are complex. They involve the digital backbone of an institution. And while Zoom is a terrific, terrific product, I would like to think that if I was a head salesperson for Workday, I want to be in the face of the person. Well, now you're going to. So shouldn't I presume if these are the numbers you can do off of Zoom, how much better can you do face-to-face?
So first of all, we saw the acceleration we were hoping for in new bookings, and so that was a really good sign. During the worst parts of the pandemic, our HR product line actually held up pretty well because people were focused on understanding how their employees were doing. Employee experience, employee engagement was everything, but finance lagged. And what we saw in the first quarter was the transformation of the CFO office is back in full force, and I expect us to have a very good year.
Now, when you say we have to have people understand this, we do finance, a lot of times that's because two companies merge and maybe you come out ahead. I've seen that time and again. A lot of it is just because people are somewhat actually not realizing that there's a digital component to this. And you have to do what I regard as almost missionary work. How does that go?
Well, so we are definitely going through a digital transformation of the office of the CFO. The tools of the past, if they were lacking before the pandemic, they were shown to be extremely lacking during the pandemic. They were not flexible. If you had a plan multiple times, which almost all companies had to replan, they just couldn't keep up. And so now we see great demand for this digital transformation in the cloud with flexible, modern applications. And you know, Workday's message has been the same for a while now. You can plan, execute, and analyze all in one system. And that message is really resonating. And it's manifesting itself in the numbers. And I think during the pandemic, these projects were large projects, and some of them got put on hold. But now they're being opened up and released again, and so we're very optimistic.
Well, it sounds like you're seeing people traveling again. A lot of people said it wouldn't happen. We had Zoom, and people wouldn't resume travel. That's not the case.
People are traveling. I think it's a combination of the vaccinations and COVID rates going down, and you know, just having a handle on COVID. We're seeing travel again. But we're also seeing businesses look forward and being optimistic and investing again. And that's probably an even more important sentiment that that we're all looking forward. We're all looking for growth. All the economic indicators are positive. And when that happens, that usually bodes well for companies like Workday.
Yeah, you're right. There were too much in the paper today. Five stories on CapEx being spent on, not enough on yours. Now, I want to talk about a blog that you and Mr. Fernandez wrote. There's a paragraph here that troubles me because I think it's truth and I don't want it to be truth. As we look to the future of work, we see the talent is everywhere, but opportunity is not, and we are committed to closing that gap. If we are companies and we want to make a profit, and we want to have sales, and we want to expand, how come we're not hiring these people?
You know, I think this is not just Workday. This is the entire world of corporate America and global organizations. We tend to hire the ones that fit perfectly and look perfect on resumes. But there's a ton of talent out there, whether it's veterans or folks that have gone home for a while to take care, caretakers, and now are back in the workforce, or just folks that did not go to the right schools and didn't have the right opportunities. Well, they're still really valuable employees going forward, and all of us just need to figure out how to embrace them. And Workday, as a leader in HR, I think it's our job not just to do it at Workday, but to help our customers do it as well, whether it's through training, whether it's through just education. We can just make everything better.
Double the number of Black and Latinx leaders in the U.S. by 2023. That is one awesome and difficult goal. Why set it so close? Why not say 2025? Why not give yourself some breathing room?
Well, you know, goals have to be aggressive if you really want to drive results. And it's an aggressive goal, but I think it's absolutely achievable. We're a company that's known as a great place to work. We've been on those great place to work lists almost since we started the company. A big part of our success has been diversity. And I frankly would like our employee base over time to resemble the diversity in the country more so than it does today. I mean, we're better than most Silicon Valley companies, but not by a lot. And I'd like us to be more representative of our population. And, you know, whenever we set aggressive goals, we've figured out a way to get there.
All right. Well, look, when I was at Goldman Sachs in 1986, I was tasked to get as many people, including people of color, at Cornell, at Harvard, a bunch of schools, all the schools we know that you call the right schools, which we know are no longer the right schools. But I couldn't find anybody to get, or if I was up against the same companies, you know, the Credit Suisse, I was up against Morgan Stanley. Where are you going to go to find these amazing people? Because a lot of them are at high schools with guidance counselors that don't tell them, listen, you could go to Stanford. They look at how many people are going to Stanford in that school. They see none, and they send the person to another fine school, but it's not on your radar screen.
Well, so that's it. You nailed it, Jim. We're extending our net or our reach to schools that may not typically be on the list. We're recruiting at some of the historically Black colleges and universities. We're moving our operations. We're not moving them, but we're not just centered in California anymore. We have a big operation in Boulder. We're building offices in Atlanta. As you know, I think we have a big office in Dublin, Ireland. And so in many cases, we're going to where the talent is, not forcing them to come out to California. I think that's a tough one. That's tough. Cost of living is high here. People want to stay close to their families. So we have to go where the talent is. And so what I think you'll see over time is us diversifying our locations around the country and around the globe.
One last question. Did what happened at the PGA help you think in getting some recruits?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if you can tell my voice is raspy, but I was rooting really hard for my buddy Phil. And what an amazing accomplishment. He's a class act. He handled himself with such grace. And at the core, he's just an innovator. And, you know, we pride ourselves in innovation. He innovated a new way at 50 to win. And
I would say just watch out. I think he's on to something, and I think you'll see a lot more of Phil in the next few years.
I didn't know he hung out with Tom Brady, another guy who is just permanently young. Listen, I think what you're doing is admirable as the numbers you delivered, if not more so. And Neil Bushry, the chairman and co-founder of Workday, WDAY, thank you so much, Anil. Good to see you.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to be with you.
Companies that take this forward look recognize that our country is not what it was when I was in a position of alleged corporate power. And it's so great to see people change. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, activate your sharpest investing instincts. Can this company activate some serious returns in your portfolio? Cramer with a high octane earnings report. Next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
In the last couple of weeks, the turbocharged growth stocks have finally started rebounding off their lows. But can they keep climbing? Tonight we got results from Okta, the cybersecurity company that handles identity management for the enterprise. The company reported excellent numbers, narrower than expected loss, higher than expected sales, up 37% year over year. Guidance for both the next quarter and the full year, some people saying mixed. I don't know. I mean, they're talking a little bit about better sales but larger losses. I look at certain billing numbers called remaining performance obligations, and they're very good. So what do we make of these numbers? Let's check in with Todd McKinney. He's the chairman, co-founder, and CEO of Okta. To hear more about the quarter, where his company's headed, Mr. McKinney, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, Todd. You know, Todd, I'm reading about these different break-ins, the Colonials, whatever. We know they're going all over the place. People are even willing to store some Bitcoin on their balance sheet so they can pay off. I'm thinking that a lot of what's happened is these people are getting in and they are impersonating other people. And if they did have Okta, they couldn't be impersonated. True or false?
It's all these cybersecurity issues and the importance of cybersecurity is companies go with more modern cloud technology as they want to transform their customer experience to include websites and mobile apps. Identity is at the center of all that. You have to log that customer in securely. You have to get that employee connected to their cloud application securely. So that's an identity challenge. And all these cyber attacks, as you mentioned, whether it's the Colonial attack or it's the SolarWinds attack or the Exchange attack, they may break in through a network or get installed with some malware. But what they do quickly is they go after the identity system, whether it's a legacy Active Directory on-premise or it's another identity system, and they get through those weak identity systems and spread around. So identity is the key to many, many things, security being just one of them.
Well, Todd, I have to tell you, if I were the Justice Department, I would have to try and find some way for them to hire you. And the way to do it is to go after them for paying off, like ransom, the Corrupt Government Act in 19. Carter set this up. You weren't allowed to pay ransom. That's how they stopped it. These people are paying ransom to governments rather than spending the money on Okta to eliminate the possibility of impersonation. I don't get it. But is it going to come to that?
Well, it is the one thing I know for sure, Jim, is that, you know, people talk about how these cybersecurity issues are helping cybersecurity companies sell more products. But when I sit next to these customers that I go talk to, when I sit next to them and look them in the eye, they're very, very concerned. They want to get to these zero trust environments. They're being hit by these supply chain attacks, these ransomware attacks, and they need help. And I think the help can come from many fronts. It could come from identity. They can get great identity from Okta. They can get better security from everyone in the ecosystem. They can get better government response. So it's really a collective thing we have to do together because customers and government agencies and public sector and our companies need help.
Yes. And if our government's not going to play hardball, It's not going to go away. A lot of people, Todd, they seize on different metrics. You know what? I'm out of that game. I want to see cash flow, and your cash flow is great. I want to see remaining performance obligations. I happen to be a subscription guy. I know that's the key number. 52% is the number that really jumps out at me. That pretty much assures you're going to have some great quarters coming ahead.
Yeah, it's the backlog. It's the remaining performance obligation. So how much is remaining on the signed contract? So it shows the things I get excited about when I hear that number is customer success, because that means we not only have customers signing up for large deals, but they're over a long duration of time, which means there's a commitment to Okta, and we have a commitment to them to make them successful over the long term.
Now, we had Zscaler on last night, too. I know they partnered with you. I mean, obviously, there's been a big step up in spending in your space, correct, since these incidents?
You're seeing it across the board. Yeah, these customers need to solve these problems. They need to have great identity. They need to have great security across the board. And, you know, Zscaler is a great partner of ours. And that's one of the examples of where we're working together to bring a better environment and a better tech stack to all the customers.
All right. Now, there have been few bigger fans in the media of Okta than I am. So that allows me to ask a tough question. Mr. Mike Khoury, CFO, obviously terrific man, has done some great things, was on your audit committee for years, knows your company. He's now departing after a very small, short period of time. Now you're getting a terrific person you might know from Salesforce. But when we see that kind of turnover, you know it does raise eyebrows.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't something we planned. I've known Mike for a long time. Mike is a great guy. He's a friend of mine. He's a friend of Okta. I think that we learned a lot working closely together. It's different than the board relationship. The management relationship is different. And I think we learned working together that it was probably better for us to stay friends and have a mutual parting. And a big part of that, too, is that Brett is really ready to step up in this interim role. And if you think of what Brett did, he ran FP&A. And one of the key things we have to get right over the next, you know, several quarters is the model and the integration with Auth0. And so there's no better guy to lead us through that than Brett. So I'm excited to be working with him as the interim CFO. And we'll go out and survey the market for the best person in the world. And there's a good chance. Brett is a strong candidate for the permanent job.
All right, that is true. I should have considered the Auth0, because that's the last question I wanted to ask you. Are you happy with how that acquisition is working out?
Well, we closed it on the 3rd of this month, so 3 weeks working closely together. And besides the great feeling with the people and the meeting of the minds in terms of culture, the most positive thing is that when you talk to customers, it's very clear. First of all, it's very clear that their prospective customer list and their customers does not overlap that much with ours. There's some overlap, but they're kind of distinct markets, this developer-centric customer identity market. And this, our approach to science, to customer identity was low code, more automated. And they're really separate segments of this $30 billion TAM. So we're collaborating well on the deals we were both trying to sell to and sorting that out and getting the customer the right solution. And when you look at the guide for the year now, it includes that Auth0 factor, which is going to be accelerated growth, as we're going to really take over this $30 billion TAM and bring great value to customers.
Well, I think that it's going to get better and better as the economy opens up, so you can go fly face to face, because you are a very convincing person, because you're an honest, straightforward person who works real hard. He's got a great product. That is Todd McKinnon, Chairman and CEO of Okta. Love seeing you in the program. Thank you, Todd. Good to see you.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
All right. Guys, this is one of those you kind of hope it comes down so you can buy more. Man Money's back after the break.
Coming up, each quarter is unique in its own special way. Snowflake joins the show to break down what makes this one different from all the others. Next.
All right, so when's it going to be safe to circle back to the formerly high-flying cloud stocks that have been hammered this year? Take Snowflake, total Cramer fave, cloud-based data warehousing leader that came public with a bang last September. This is one of the most compelling growth stories I have ever seen. This is the fastest major growth company in the market. But great growth stories become toxic when everybody's worried about inflation. They're all about future earnings many years down the road, and inflation erodes the value of those future earnings. So Snowflake spent months getting clobbered until a couple weeks ago when we started seeing signs that inflation might be a bait on its own. Since then, the stock has rallied a quick 27%. But then tonight, So they reported its numbers and it's selling off a little after. What happened? Well, the company delivered spectacular sales, up a stunning 110% year over year, fastest in all of 2021. Guidance solid. Okay, so it wasn't a knock your sock off set of numbers, though I thought it was. Given how much the stock had run in the last couple of weeks, though, I think some people are looking for a monster blowout. Doesn't help with Snowflake and its fast-growing compadres. No longer get the benefit of the doubt in this market. At some point, though, this group will come back in style, and when it does, this will be the one. So let's dig deeper with Frank Slootman. He's the chairman and CEO of Snowflake. Find out more about the quarter where his company said, Mr. Slootman, welcome back to Mad Money.
Yeah, good to be back, Jim.
All right, so Frank, how is it possible, given the savings, given the amount of things you need because data drives operations, it is still the super early innings and going to the cloud and looking at Snowflake?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a whole bunch of sort of mega trends that are operating on our space. Obviously, on the one hand, the modernization move from on-premise to cloud-scale computing. Then we have the rise of data science. You know, people are really trying to drive the value, you know, from data sciences. And there's a lot of enabling technology that needs to be in place to do that. And the value of being able to enrich data, put data in context, I mean, it's opening people's eyes to opportunities they've never had before. So we're going through a bit of a renaissance, if you will, people really discovering the true value of data. It's very exciting to be in the business this day and age.
I am shocked. What's been going on in Europe and Asia that they woke up? Because these are spectacular numbers.
Well, you know, we were operationally, you know, not set up the way we needed to be, you know, just to put up mildly. And we made a lot of moves and changes in leadership in different places. And when you have a great product like Snowflake, it doesn't take long before you start seeing the effects of that. So we were pleased with the progress we're making there, but much more to come. You know.
Now, it is very clear with the number of huge seven-figure deals you did versus previous, it's almost as if someone flicked a switch and realized, you know what, we have no choice. We have to leave who we're using, and we have to go to Snowflake. And it happened this quarter.
Well, it's not all this quarter. It's not that simple. A lot of what you're seeing, it's sort of the tip of the iceberg, right? It's all queuing up over periods of time. Our sales cycles are long. It's just every quarter, you know, you sort of get to see, you know, what we're being able to harvest in that particular period. But, you know, our business is going to conduct itself really over, you know, considerable long periods of time. And it's sort of the message to investors is, you know, to really understand, you know, we're signing on here for a journey that is, you know, 5 to 10 years. And it's not an overnight, you know, throw in a quick switch and everything is great. These are big changes that we are experiencing in the marketplace. And we're just super happy to be in the middle of that and being an enabler of that. You
know? And we know that they're big companies. We've got a DoorDash, which has suddenly grown unbelievably, a Comcast, which we work for. But you know what I like? In Rise of the Data Cloud, your book, you talk about democracy of data. You could be a one-man band and use Snowflake. I feel if I opened a store on, let's say Shopify, I could hire you and only have to pay the minutes I need you, so you wouldn't bankrupt me. That's what my business would grow.
Yeah, it's very unusual in the world of software, at least in my experience, which is a long time, unfortunately, these days, is that you see a single product that can handle the largest data estates in the world, but it can also do the smallest. And that sort of has expanded our market opportunity dramatically. And we have a very large business in software companies that are quite small. They're just getting started. They're consuming small amounts, but they have huge aspirations, and they can really grow to very large heights, you know, as they go along. And the platform really reaches down, you know, to that level. So that's really great.
Well, let me ask you about something. We had Exxon report today. I always love the quote in your book, which talks about how oil drove economic progress in the 20th century. Data is driving progress today. I saw Exxon. They had some board members made a challenge. Had some new board members that are more ESG oriented. I am conscious that in your book, you say, and this is your philosophy, look, I'm here to run the business. As the CEO, I only have one job, and that is to increase the value of the franchise. It's not about profits or revenues per se. The investors want to maximize what their investment is potentially worth. Has that going out of style at a lot of companies?
I think privately, when you talk to CEOs, that's exactly how they feel. They know what their job is. It's just in the public realm, it's a little bit more difficult, as we all know, to reflect that. But it's hard enough to make your way in the world as it is right now, and for not to have your total focus committed, to the mission of running the business. So I think we all know, which way is up.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's important. Like, for instance, you have Expedia as one of your clients. That's Barry Diller, okay? Barry Diller's one of the toughest, but he's as tough as you, all right? He doesn't want to hear that you're busy doing something that is not really involved with his account when he wants you on your account. I think a lot of people have to realize, as much as we want to devote as much time as we can to causes, there are clients, and we work for the clients. And we work for the shareholders. So sometimes we don't have the choice that people think we have.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'm actually heartened by the fact that we're starting to come around, sort of rediscover that. Look at, we're hired hands here. We're here to do a job, and we're doing it to the best of our abilities. That's what we do when we get up every day.
Well, a lot of people are saying to me, how can you be with this snowflake? They didn't make the stock went up and then went down. Why should I own it? Frank, you are the fastest growing publicly traded billion-dollar company in the world right now.
Yes, exactly. Growth at scale is a rare thing. And, we're not a growth at all cost company. You see our improving efficiencies at the gross margin line, at the operating line, as well as on cash flow. So, we're trying to be a fast investor, but we want to do it, with high yield and with high efficiency. And you're seeing that in the numbers. We're really improving across the board, not just at the top end.
Yeah. If everyone expected the stock to go to 1,000 day one, they haven't studied Frank, Data Domain. We had a Neil Bush for you, and that was a win for you. And they haven't studied how to make really big money in the market. And that's to stick with the guy who knows how to do it. Frank Slootman, Chairman and CEO of Snowflake. Thank you for coming on the show, Frank.
You bet. Thanks, Jim.
Those of you who jump ship because the stock goes down a little bit, I want you to stay away from this one. I don't want you to make the money that Frank Slootman's going to make. Mad Money's back after the break.
Stick around.
May I make a suggestion? I would stay with him.
The lightning round is coming up next.
It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Come on, come on, and then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Ski daddy, time for the lightning round. I'm going to start with John in New York. John.
Booyah, Jim. Been a fan for over a decade. Long term, what do you think about $74 a share? Chewy.
Chewy has one of those businesses where you sign up for auto renewal. Auto renewal is the single most profitable form of business in the world today. I am a buyer. Chewy. Joe in Florida. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Kramer. My son, Anthony, he has money in a index fund.
All right.
He purchased 10 shares of Trade Desk at $498.
Oh, he bought it when it was down. That was smart. I think you're making a comeback. The quarter wasn't nearly as bad as the stock indicated. I think your son's got horse sense. Jay in Florida. Jay.
Hey, Kramer, it's Jay here in Florida. Thanks for taking my call.
What's going
on? What are your thoughts on APP, AppLovin?
Man, how did you find that one? I mean, that's just another one of those stocks that I got to do work on because it sounds like all the other stocks. I'll come back. I'll do homework. And that, ladies and gentlemen, have the lightning round.
The lightning round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up. Chomp into greatness. Kramer dreams big on how Fang is brushing into the future with a sharp assist from Microsoft. Next. Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street.
Carl, I mean, it's sometimes difficult to be with my partner who's completely out of touch with the people who go to Burlington.
I hear you.
He thinks Burlington is a town in Vermont.
Well, it is.
Burlington, Vermont.
It is.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Jim Cramer, you're one of my heroes.
I look forward to your show every weeknight.
Thank you so much for helping beginning investors like me.
When you talk about the market, I just believe that you're spot on.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much. Every night we watch you, I have learned and earned.
You never want to take great companies for granted. But you see a lot of that in the way we judge big tech. When it comes to FANG plus M, my acronym for Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, and Microsoft, they don't get much credit for the fact that they're taking over the world. Instead, they're often written off as has-beens, just exhausted dinosaurs, now known more for savage government inquiries than genuine innovations. There's a lot of myopic focus on their minor missteps and not much excitement for everything that they're doing right. I think that's a mistake. Now, don't get me wrong. These are some of the richest companies in the world, and sometimes they do things that are, let's say, eccentric. When Amazon spends $8.45 billion on a film and TV studio like they're doing with MGM, I regard it as a real head-scratcher. Granted, Amazon has failed to scale in entertainment, and this deal could help. It'd be nice to ask Alexa, Alexa, please put on Goldfinger, and have it might work. You know, it could work. But MGM is not known for its great productions these days. Still, $8 billion is a rounding error for these guys, and maybe they see something that I'm missing. They certainly need to change things up in sports or gaming because they're squandering their NFL rights by having nothing special surrounding the games. But then you get some little notice things out of FANG that should take your breath away, but you probably don't even read them. Case in point, this morning, the Wall Street Journal reported that Google's partnered with HCA, that's the gigantic hospital chain, to take patient records and use them to make healthcare algorithms that help improve efficiency and produce better outcomes. The patient data will be stripped of identifying information, so there's no HIPAA violation, thank heavens. Now, I think this is amazing. We've got a treasure trove of healthcare data that can be stored in Google Cloud and then analyzed so that the hospitals can figure out how to do a better job with patients. Who knows? This could even help develop medicines without additional human guinea pigs. Now, I know IBM tried to do something similar with Watson a while ago, but they weren't able to pull it off. I think this is one of those things that's a great idea. But it can't work unless you get buy-in from the healthcare professionals, which IBM didn't have. Google's program, it's actually the opposite. It's as if Watson landed the biggest possible client and is now going to use artificial intelligence to help them do a better job. The great thing about this move from Google, unlike IBM's earlier attempts, they're not trumpeting anything here. They're just talking about algorithms, something makes your eyes glaze over. Totally non-promotional. I've been waiting for Google to do something big in healthcare besides partnering with Dexcom for diabetes analytics. I've been waiting for years. I think this is it. You've got to understand, the healthcare industry has all these electric medical records, and they don't do anything with them. There's so much useful data in here that could help you, the patient. When you go to the doctor, they'll often give you advice that's based on their own experience. That's called anecdotal. If you ask for something more empirical, that makes it less of a guessing game. But it isn't there. That's what Google's doing with this program. If it works, it is a gigantic deal. Honestly, this is a kind of incredible thing that FANG plus Microsoft come up with routinely, yet you rarely hear much about it. It's the kind of thing that makes you want to buy the stock. And even though Google's up 36% for the year, you know what? I think it's got a lot more room to run. I'd like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'd find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.